B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, so re-entry Monday with Felger and Maz here from our Town Fair Tire Studios. We've got Bruins on the board, how they're handling this layoff, and Blues Sharks. You've been watching that. Feels like we're getting closer to the Blues. Murray's happy. He wants a short flight and barbecue, even though it's not going to be as entertaining of a series and maybe a harder series. Murray's happy because he gets to eat the food that he wants to eat in St. Louis.
And you'll be eventually happy because, like you just said, it'll be a harder series and there'll be more to talk about. You're going to get tighter games. And it'll be a more competitive series, which is what you want.
Way more to talk about with San Jose. There'll be more goals. There'll be more action.
Jumbo Joe and his stupid beard.
And there'll be more recognizable characters. Yep, you bet. And the whole Sharks loser storyline, I thought that would be right up your alley, Murray. But again,
the Blues are notorious losers. They're one of the oldest teams in the NHL that's never won a cup.
Not like this.
Nah.
I think there's a chance that the Blues are going to bore the crap out of me. And I'm not saying the games because there's a championship at stake. I'm just telling you that I look at the Blues and I'm not sure what I see.
Okay, so there's that on the table.
You'll find people to hate. And then there's the David Backus storyline, too.
Who cares? Oh, my God. That's second on my list of HK. Who cares? Number one, of course, being the St. Louis rematch from 1970. That can kiss the inside of my ass. That thing. That is ridiculous. Oh, my God. Boring. And then David Backus going home. Number two. Two things we shan't be discussing on Felger and Maz. Those two things. San Jose, far more dynamic, far more interesting of a series, but Murray doesn't want to fly to San Francisco.
It's a long flight.
So, Felger and Maz are traveling either way, in case you didn't know. Then Murray doesn't like long flights. So, he's going to give you St. Louis, so we're all going to suffer because Murray doesn't like long flights. We have the Kyrie latest over the weekend and this Patriots stuff. Your calls on all of it, as promised. Mark in Medford. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Big Jim, it looks like you're going to get your wish because after what I watched yesterday, the Sharks looked like they were beaching themselves one by one. Did you see halfway through the third period? There was eight players left on the bench.
Yeah.
Eight. That was embarrassing yesterday. The Sharks looked awful. And Martin Jones, what a piece of Swiss cheese, guys. It looks like the Bruins are going to beat the Blues in five.
Okay, well, let's first things first. You also might want the Sharks because they're all beat up. Carlson is clearly not himself.
Yeah, he's not right. He had a horrible turnover at the first goal.
Oh, horrible. Absolutely. And he can barely move. He barely played at the end of the game before. He didn't play at all in the third period last night, I don't think.
Yeah, correct.
Was it Hurdle that went out?
Hurdle went out. And
did Pavelski go out,
yes,
too?
Yeah, there was a couple of questionable headshots. That's what made that crowd nuts about, you know, calling the refs a-holes or whatever. So, I found rich, by the way.
Hold on. So explain that. So the crowd in San Jose was chanting,
"Refs, you suck. Refs, you suck."
And why do you find that rich?
Well, because the refs gifted the Sharks one of the wins in this series in overtime with the hand pass that they chose to ignore. So I just found that very ironic.
The San Jose fans have a lot of nerve to be complaining about the refs after what they've been handed this postseason.
Seriously, I was going to say the only good news that would come out of this, and not the only, but one of the pieces of good news that would come out of this is San Jose has had such a horseshoe jammed up its butt that for them to get bounced now would be just. Like, they don't deserve that thing that happened in the Vegas series in the first round when they get the 5-minute major down three goals and scored four times. Like, talk about a freaking horseshoe up your backside. Like, that is one of the great injustices of all time, if you ask me.
Jake and Bill Ricka with an NBA thought. Hi, Jake.
Hey, I just want to emphasize on stopping Giannis next year. I think the Bucks are going to do that to themselves because they're going to be losing a lot of key pieces. At least free agency is going to hurt them with Middleton, Lopez, Brogdon, Mirotic. Those are some key guys. And I think the Celtics should stay packed and hold on to Kyrie.
Okay.
And they should talk to Al Horford first and see what he wants in free agency because he was the guy that got Boston on the map being the star free agent signing a few years back.
Jake, Mirotic and Lopez, you don't need to worry about.
Yeah, Middleton's one thing. But the other, you know, and even Brogdon.
No, Brogdon's good.
Yeah, Brogdon's a good player, too.
So the Bucks aren't going to lose all of them. Maybe they can only keep Middleton or Brogdon. They can keep them all if they sign it. They have bird rights, so they can go over with those guys. Lopez and Mirotic and Ilya Slova and those guys, those are all interchangeable. You go find another big stiff to stand 2 feet outside the three-point line and just bomb away. So, no, I don't. To me, those guys are, you know, that's not why they're there. Middleton a little closer to it. Brogdon's good. Giannis is a guy you need to account for. Giannis is a guy you need to worry about.
I just think that, again, the way I put it is that's a 10-year problem. That's not a 1-year problem or a 2-year problem. That's a 10-year problem. If you're the Celtics, you got to try to come up with some better answer for that than throwing 5 guys at him. You got to do better than that.
Mike and Pawtucket on the hockey. Hi, Mike.
Yes. I was watching the Blues-Sharks game yesterday, and isn't it quite obvious that NBC is dying for a San Jose-Boston matchup? They're constantly showing Carlson and Joe Thornton, the pretty boys. Yep. I mean, they're giving Craig Berube no credit for what he's done with this team. They kept showing Peter DeBoer from San Jose.
So, Mike,
they wouldn't show Craig Berube.
Mike, San Jose's more interesting. That's why.
Yeah, well, I think St. Louis is just as interesting. But obviously, San Jose are the pretty boys, and the Joe Thornton from Boston storyline.
Yeah.
So that's what we got to deal with.
Yeah. What's wrong with that? The network wants people to tune in now. I don't blame them. San Jose's more interesting. Period. They're a more interesting team. I don't know if they're better, but they're damn straight more interesting. And they are. And it's not just because they got hair and weird facial hair and all sorts of that stuff. I mean, they have that.
Bigger names.
Which does make it more telegenic, but they have bigger names. They have bigger names. They have, I think, 2 of the last 3 Norris winners between Carlson and Burns, or 2 of the last 4, whatever it is. And they've been around. They've been knocking. They went to the finals 3 years ago. They've been knocking at the door for like 20 years. It's just a more recognizable national team. The Sharks, they are. So I don't blame NBC one bit.
But you go through them all. Like, really, Pavelski, Couture, Evander Kane. Like, they got all these big-name guys, some of whom are, you know, controversial players, some of whom are good players. Like, the whole thing, you look at it and you say, well, there's a guy I know. There's a name. There's another one. The Blues? Like, really?
Get ready for the Midwest, boys.
So, look, Murray, I hear you. It could very well be that we're going there. But in all honesty, there's Murray, no question. San Jose's a more interesting team.
I'll agree or disagree.
No, you know that's not you, Murray. Not,
they don't have Gloria.
Don't be intellectually dishonest.
I think they got your number.
You want to go to you went to St. Louis last year on vacation, right? Of all things,
Gloria. Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so what again? Like, Albany was all booked up. This guy goes to St. Louis on vacation of all places.
Kind of a bit. You go to terrible cities, you make the best of it.
Okay, so Murray does a thing every year. He vacations in terrible cities. This is true. This I don't mean to go into story time, but there was 1 year you went to like Buffalo and Detroit.
That was last year. Buffalo, Detroit, Indy.
Okay. Can you imagine that, folks?
One of them's supposed to be good, one's supposed to be bad, one's supposed to be like the middle bear.
Yeah. You make the best
of it. It's like Goldilocks.
Hold on. Between Indy, Detroit, and Buffalo, what's the...
Detroit's the winner. Detroit's actually great. And Indy was a surprising gem.
So Indy's underrated.
This is what
you brought it up.
This is what I'm talking about.
Buffalo blows.
Okay. This is what I'm saying. Murray goes to hellacious, horrible cities.
Like bad football.
On vacation in the summer.
That's how you learn the country.
So he went to St. Louis last year?
Yeah, to see friends. This was just an offshoot.
Yeah, okay. My guess is Murray left some dirt behind in St. Louis that he's looking to go back and pick up.
Oh, yeah, no. He buried it right under the arch.
Something. Something. He wants to go back to St. effing Louis.
Yeah, he's got a little black box buried under the arch. I can't tell you what's in it.
Trust me, is purely mediocre. Is a purely mediocre one-horse Midwestern town.
St. Louis blows.
It
got
sucks.
Cardinals-Cubs that weekend, too. We get to catch
I don't care. I really don't care.
I can watch that on TV.
So for that... Because Murray wants to go collect his dirt back in St. Louis. We've all got to watch the Blues as opposed to the Sharks, which would be an epic series. And, oh, by the way, probably a more beatable team now that you think about
it. St. Louis is a rat hole, but I bet we can get a good steak there.
Dan in the car. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, I just want to let you guys know a little tidbit here. St. Louis and San Jose, weren't they both farm teams for Worcester? No, just joking, guys. Love your show. Great to hear you.
Okay.
Worcester what? Worcester what?
I don't see the joke.
Me neither.
Me either.
So why do you engage him, Miss?
I'm just answering the question.
Don't encourage him to do that again.
Sorry.
We don't do jokes on this show, and that's why.
So, someone's getting mad.
95% of jokes are not funny.
Figuring out he's going to have to take 2 planes to get to St. Louis.
90.
Coming up next, Maz's Boston Red Sox win again. Guess who keeps hitting home runs? Guess who keeps hitting home runs? Guess who else hit a home? Not a good day for Maz, I don't think, today. We'll get to that right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
High fly ball left field, that's deep. Backing up McKinney, backing up, leaping up, it is gone. He has struck again. Chavis with number 9, and the Red Sox open it up 6-2.
Your guy did it again, Maz.
Yep.
Your guy did it again, Michael Chavis. Are you still on him?
What do you mean by on him?
Ah, you were ripping him the other day on the baseball reporters. I heard pretty good.
So again, look, I he's not my most likable player on the team.
Why? Right? Why don't you like him?
Because there are a bunch of things about him that bug me. First of all, he had that game-winning hit last week. And look, again, I want to separate here because people always take this crap personally. So again, let me separate. I love what he's giving them in terms of production. How could you not? Sure, I love the home runs. I love the RBI. I don't need him telling me that he's got all the answers with game-winning hits and clutch situations because it's a spot that he really excelled at in the minor leagues, as he told us, as if minor league games mean anything, for crying out loud. So that's number one. Strikes me as a little too cocky for his own good. And, I don't know, Shaughnessy, of all people, wrote a column about the kid today and how great he is. Is anyone ever going to mention the fact that he got popped for PEDs in the minor leagues?
Well, Dan did sort of mention it in the column.
Did he? Yeah, he did. I must have missed it then.
Well, but hold on.
Who owns that newspaper again, Maz? Come on.
But he did mention it. I know you said that in our email exchange, and then I read it. He does. I mean, well, the pages are a little sticky. You do have to check whether this is Dan Shaughnessy. But Shaughnessy wrote today.
Read me the section. I must have missed it.
Stand by. It is as if Michael Chavis has been delivered from central casting, Dan writes. Born and bred in Georgia, armed with a golly gee politeness and 450-foot power, Chavis has helped save the Red Sox season.
True. I mean, except, you know, the golly gee stuff, I could give a rat's ass about.
So you agree he's helped save the
season? Oh, no, he's had a huge impact. There's no two ways about it.
Interesting. Okay. He writes, Sunday against the Astros, batting leadoff of all places, Chavis swung at everything he saw. 6 pitches, 4 balls in play. He cracked a 420-foot homer and a 7th-inning single that represented the winning run in Boston's 4-3 victory over the best team in baseball. The comeback victory averted a rare Fenway sweep of the Sox and fortified the growing legend of Michael Chavis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you resent the growing legend?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Again, because I told you, I don't feel like... Is anyone going to ask the Red Sox, do you guys have any concerns about this guy's ability to keep this up? He got popped for PEDs in the minor leagues. You tried to trade him at the deadline last year.
So how is that his fault?
What do you mean, how is it his fault?
How is that Chavis' fault that no one's asking those questions?
Well, it's not Chavis' fault.
So your problem is with the coverage, not the player?
Yeah.
Ah, I have that experience often.
And the fan base.
Yes, fine, fair enough.
Yeah.
So he's not the problem. It's you out there.
Yeah, I would say that that's accurate.
Perfect. I've experienced that constantly.
Shaughnessy, of all people, who reminded us that, like, you know, David Ortiz, for crying out loud, didn't he ask him point blank about the whole steroid thing when Ortiz was here? Nothing with this kid. Nobody's asked this kid anything.
So Dan does mention it, though. It's down at the bottom of the column.
No wonder I missed it.
Okay. And he mentions about Chavis, the experience in the big leagues versus being in the minor leagues, and the lighting is so much better, like, for example.
Oh, yeah,
no,
that's what it is. It's the lighting.
Well, he says, dude. This is Chavis. Quote, dude, the first game in Tampa, I asked the guys, are these lights too bright? Chavis answered, I couldn't even look at them. I'm just so used to different kinds of lights, and that's something that people talk about when they come up from the minors, how different it is. In regards to just general conditions, it's the big leagues. I'm sure you've heard about the minors. It ain't a diamond. I'm loving it, honestly. Then Shaughnessy writes, it is not all charter flights and hotel room service. Chavis already has had a mini slump, and he's fanned 28 times in 25 games. We could also make things uncomfortable by mentioning that he was suspended by MLB for 80 games when he tested positive for a PED in April of 2018. Chavis took to Twitter to apologize and claim, like everyone else, that he never purposely ingested any illegal substance. And then he just goes on.
And that's it. Yeah.
So he did mention it.
Okay, I missed it.
Okay, so look, he...
Because I expected Shaughnessy to say, whoa, let's stop the bus here. How do we know how long this is going to go on for?
So it's not Chavis's fault that no one's asking, do you think you can keep it up given the fact that you were a steroid guy and the team tried to trade you last year?
Right. Like, again, that's my concern. And I think, honestly, I think these are questions for the Red Sox, for the organization. Like, I think even if it's off the record, pull someone aside and say, hey, are you guys confident this guy can stay on the field? And if he...
Who did they try and trade him for last year?
He was in... I think he was offered up to the Orioles for Zach Britton. That's what I believe. Jimmy says he was offered up to the Nationals for Kelvin Herrera.
Have these been reported items, or are these Baseball Reporter exclusives?
I would say mostly Baseball Reporter exclusives.
According to the Baseball Reporters here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, the Red Sox tried to trade Michael Chavis last year for Zach Britton and, you say, Herrera in Philadelphia?
Kelvin Herrera, yeah. Washington at the time.
Sorry.
Yeah. And so, again, I think they were, you know, they were willing, and all of a sudden he came out of the woodwork, and now he has solved their second base problem. And with him, in any game he has appeared this year, I think they're 17-9.
Well, Dan writes, the Sox were 7-13 when Chavis was called to the bigs, and they're now 24-22, 25-22 after today. Seemingly bound for the playoff bid we expected from a defending world champion, and Chavis is a big part of it. You did happen to like the thing, though, at Fenway yesterday, where he pointed to the kid up in the booth who announced him.
Okay, so that I did like.
So what happened? For those who don't know,
so
what's happened.
On Sundays, a lot of times, what they'll do is they'll have kids do player introductions when they come up to bat. I don't know if it's for an inning or a couple of innings or whatever, but in any case, when the kid announced Chavis got into the batter's box, you know, just before he stepped in, looked up, pointed up the kid as if to say thank you, which I thought was... Like, for something so basic.
And then he homered.
Very few big leaguers do it. Yeah. Right. And then on the first pitch, he jacked one over the wall. And when he crossed the plate, he pointed up to the kid again as if to say, you know, you gave me luck.
Don't tell me you have a problem with this.
No, that part I don't. I like that part of the story because he was nice to a kid.
Thank you. I'm surprised.
Ah, there you go.
I figured you were going to say.
No.
Forced.
There is something, Murray, that Maz likes.
And
we've got it.
Because it's a basic thing that, like, you would think more big leaguers would do. But they're also, you know...
Wrapped up in their own head.
Oh, they all have such tight asses, for crying out loud. They get into the batter's box. They don't even want to acknowledge. There's like a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old up there who just had the moment of his life. Right? So this kid did that, and I give him credit. The other thing, and I hate to go down this road, but I read a story early on that he intends to use his place in the big leagues as a platform for his beliefs in God. And I got no time for that. I didn't like it when Tebow did it. I didn't like you're not using the big leagues as some sort of platform to hit me with your religious beliefs. Okay, I don't want that. Shut up and hit and turn the double play. Okay, and then when you screw up, answer the questions about it.
But you can wave to the kid. That's cool.
That's all right. I'm okay with waving to the kid because, again, might as well be nice to a 9 or a 10-year-old.
I think the first thing that you mentioned is relevant. Did the team try and trade him last year? How much do they really believe in him? How much should you believe in him? Him being a steroid guy. Now, doesn't he, you know, when was he popped? Was it the beginning of last year?
Yes, he missed the first half of last season.
So the first half, so now we're talking, you know, 12 months clean. Or at least 6-9, you know, let's say you're still, you know, you fail the test, it means you're on it. So you're still feeling the effects of it and the benefits of it for the next, I don't know how many months, right? So just because you fail a test and you come back after 6 months doesn't mean you're quote unquote off it. You're still, the wind's still at your sails.
In theory.
So at some point, the wind dies down and you've lost the benefits of it. I mean, he's got to be closing in on that time. It's been a while now.
Okay, so last year when he came back in the second half and he played at a few different places, okay, he played in the New York Penn League, which is a ball short season, although that might have been even before, but whatever. Now that I think of it, I think he got popped in spring training. Regardless, last year, in the limited time that he was out there, he hit .298 with a .919 OPS.
Good.
So when he came back, he hit. And then this year, we know that he's hit. He's got a, you know, an OPS closing in on 1,000 in the big leagues. Have you ever looked at this guy's numbers from his early career? Taking a good look at them? 2015, his OPS in the minors, .682. 2016, combined at a couple of different levels, .684. 2017, shot up to .910.
So you're dubious.
So literally overnight. I mean, his OPS went up over 200 points.
You know what they say, you learn power.
Oh, yeah, sure you do. Yeah. And apparently you learn contact, too. Like, you learn it all. So this guy went from hitting 223, his first year in A-ball to now hitting basically, you know, 280, 290. He's hitting 290 in the big leagues when he hit 223, did I say, in A-ball his first year. How do you explain that? I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, and I'm not answering because I believe it's a rhetorical question.
The lights? It's the lights?
All right, Red Sox fans, you enjoying Michael Chavis? Maybe you shouldn't, according to Maz, unless he's waving to a kid. That we're going to allow. Everything else? Be very skeptical. You also have an issue or you have a thought, a developing opinion on the Red Sox bullpen.
I do.
Care to share it?
Yeah, and when we come...
Can you do it in a minute?
Oh, I thought you wanted... I thought we were closer to the break.
You tell me.
Yeah, so here's my feeling on the Red Sox bullpen. They tried to feed us this bullcrap about closer by committee earlier in the year. And having watched this past week, do you think it's working? Because they blew two games against Colorado, and they blew another one Friday night against Houston.
And almost blew one... Well, they didn't blow one yesterday, but they left Porcello in too long on Friday. Did they leave Sale in too long yesterday?
Okay, so but Alex Cora said on Friday night he took the blame, right?
Yeah.
For sending Porcello back out
there. And
then
he did the exact same thing with Sale yesterday.
You know why he sent Porcello back out there in the eighth on Friday night? Because he doesn't trust his bullpen. That's my assessment of it. He doesn't trust his bullpen. So they blew two games against Colorado. They won one of them, but they blew a 5-0 lead in the process and won the game anyway. Then they blew another one on Friday night. So by the time they got to the weekend, counting Friday night, Cora had lost faith in some of those relievers. This is after they decided that they were going to go with this closer by committee bullcrap that people keep trying to shove down our throats. Let me ask you a question. Who gets the ball in the eighth and ninth innings on this team now?
I've lost track.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know why they're doing it this way? Because they were able to pull it off last October with starters, and they didn't have the money, really, to go out and sign a closer. So what they said was, Cora and his cockiness and his arrogance, because he is the kind of guy that thinks he's reinvented the wheel, I can get by with the closer by committee during the regular season, and then we'll hit the playoffs, and I'll be using my starting pitchers again, or we'll get to the deadline, and maybe we'll pick up a reliever then for a fraction of the cost, whatever it is. And the reality is, it's biting them in the ass. They lost two games last week they shouldn't have lost. And they're scraping to be at 500, and right now they're not in the playoffs. And it's all because they didn't want to spend on a closer and go over that luxury.
It's not all because.
Well, it's a significant part of it.
A big thing is that they half-assed spring training and had a soft opening and lollygagged for the
first
month.
Okay, but now I'm telling you that they're starting to play better, or have been playing better, and now their bullpen's biting them in the ass. They lost two games last week they shouldn't have lost.
Okay, there are a couple Red Sox thoughts for you. You can add that to the list of topics with your calls right after Murray's up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5.
Sports Hub. And Springer, the batter, 0 for 2 with a walk. 16 home runs, 40 runs batted in for Springer. That's a high fly ball, center field deep. Bets back all the way to the bullpen, and it is gone. Oh. And the blink of an eye, the Astros have the lead in the eighth inning.
That was a bad decision. That was a bad one from the get-go. That's the best lineup in baseball. He goes seven. Every pitch is high leverage. You know, he did his job. You know, the whole thing about one hitter, get him out, what's the point, you know? And we have the best player in baseball right now with a minute second and no outs. That's on me. That's not on Rick. So I just made a bad decision, put him in a bad spot, and we pay the price. I honestly think that seven was, should have taken him after seven. You know, it's not because of what happened, you know. I just put him in the bad spot there. He doesn't deserve to lose that game.
It's on me. You know, he's got the confidence to leave me out there, and I got to do a better job of, I guess, rewarding that confidence. You know, it's 100% on me. My pitch count was intact. I was fine. I got to make a better pitch. Threw the two worst pitches of the night to back-to-back hitters, back-to-back pitches, and that was the result.
Before I go back to the phones, Mass, what was your take on the Porcello thing from Friday night?
So I think that Alex Cora is a little traumatized by his bullpen. They had a tough week against the Rockies. They get to Friday night against the Astros, and he's sort of teetering a little. The pitch count was low, and he went with his starter. If his bullpen had been reliable, he'd have gone to the bullpen. So I think ultimately it's about the bullpen. I think Cora made the mistake. Peter Abraham had a good stat in the Globe on Saturday morning, which was it was only the second time all year that Rick Porcello faced the lineup a fourth time through. Faced a batter for a fourth time in a game.
It's rare nowadays for anyone to do it.
It almost never happens. And the Astros, when they face a pitcher a third time, have an OPS over 1,200 as a team. Cora whiffed.
Not to mention what George Springer's numbers against Porcello were. Going into that game, he was 5-for-12 with two doubles and a home run.
Yeah, Cora whiffed.
So if he wanted to pull him, it was after the double. That was the time. He shouldn't have left him in for George Springer.
I mean, I think there were multiple factors for it, but I do think that one of them is that bullpen. Brazier's starting to blow up on him. You know, Workman is ultimately a sixth, seventh inning guy at best. Barnes has been good. Overall, Barnes has been good. But they don't have enough reliable guys out there, so when you only have one that you really believe in, what do? You stretch the pitcher and try to get him through eight. Now you go right to Barnes and you're all set. It cost him. He didn't trust that eighth inning in anyone else's hands. As it turned out, Porcello couldn't get it either.
Okay. As promised, back to your phones. Alan in Florida. Hi, Al.
Hello. I just want to, before I start in on what Matt said, I just want to tell you, Mike, if the Bruins would be a good-sized, bigger favorite over San Jose than they would over St. Louis. St. Louis is a much better hockey club than San Jose.
They might be.
And I'm not a hockey. I like to think I'm a pretty good knowledgeable baseball and football. I don't claim, but I love watching the Bruins. I don't claim to be an expert. I'm only telling you in Vegas the difference in the odds. Anyway, you know, it's funny, Maz. In April, when I talked about Kimbrel, I hate him. I don't want to sign him. We don't need him. And, I understand no one else in baseball has signed him, which is, to me, between him and Keuchel, you know, there's something cooking, and I can't quite understand it.
That's all about the draft pick, right? So the Red Sox had an avenue there that other teams didn't have. You're right to criticize them. I don't like Kimbrel, but you're not wrong.
Right, and you know, the thing that gets me about Chavis, you know, I mean, what he's done, you know, people complain, you know, Mookie Betts and Bogaerts, they're quiet, you know, they don't have the personnel. Everyone loved, Miller, and everyone loved the old Red Sox. Now you got a guy with a little pizzazz, bringing in a little excitement, and you're not happy because he's too cocky. I want to tell you one thing. I 100% agree with you with one thing you said. This religion baloney that every time I look at Tebow, I turn the TV off, so it makes me nauseous. So I'll agree with you with that, and I hadn't read about that. So okay. I'm believing you if you said it.
Okay, I'm just going to cut you there, Alan. So I think that turns us all off a lot. The cockiness, I don't know. If he's a great player and produces, do you care?
It still rubs me the wrong way. It's a humbling sport. Everybody fails a lot. Okay, and I'm not telling you shouldn't be excited when you get a good home run or anything. Just don't tell me you get all the answers. That's the one I don't want to hear. Don't tell me you get all the answers. You want to be, you know, have a certain style to your game and whatever else. And from a Red Sox standpoint, maybe that's going to make him good for business. Right? Maybe he'll be polarizing in some way that'll evoke a response, because I can already see some of it coming out. That'll all be good for business. I'm just telling you, when he said, I've had a lot of success in those situations in the minor leagues. Really? Well, then how come you're hitting 200 with men in scoring position? Can you explain that one to me? You don't have all the answers. Don't act like you have all the answers.
Andrew in Medford. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, guys. So I know hockey for a week, so I want to play the what-if game for a second. If the Bruins win the Stanley Cup, doesn't that make the whole Celtics situation so much worse?
Yes.
The Bruins, the Patriots, the Red Sox,
yes,
all win in one year.
Yes.
I know that it's not an actual accomplishment, but the fans care.
Yep.
And the whole act with Kyrie about, don't worry, it's me, I'll take you to the playoffs, just wait, regular season doesn't matter, it makes it so much worse. Oh, my God.
100%. 100%. If the Bruins bowed out because they just ran into Tampa and it was never really in the cards, then the Celtics are kind of off the hook. It's really not a story.
Yeah, it wouldn't have hurt as much for Celtics fans, I'm saying, and those that feel disappointed in the team.
Now the Bruins have a real chance.
Yeah.
They're the odds-on favorite. And the basketball team couldn't even get to the finals because they were crying about who gets the ball.
Lost in a gentleman's sweep.
It's a bad look, isn't it?
Or whose team it is. Not that they got bad health or a bad roster. No, no. They were caterwauling over who gets the shot and whose team it is. And that's why they're not there? Oh, it makes them look horrible. Oh, and the Bruins going and potentially winning it? Makes it it absolutely puts a magnifying glass on the Celtics and that failure.
I mean, if you believe in sort of the competition for market share, who takes the biggest hit? Oh, it's not even close.
By far.
But, I mean, they get walloped.
But they also look like, you know, you were the one team that should have gone farther than anybody. You had more talent than anybody. You had it set up for you better than anybody.
And then the star of the team after game five, minutes after it ended, sat there and said, now's not the time to be disappointed.
Oh, it's just such a horrible look.
It is. It's such a bad comment. It's a bad, such a bad comment on so many levels, it's not even funny. The only thing that could help the Celtics a little here is if Milwaukee ends up winning the whole thing and like blowing doors in the process. If they beat Toronto in five and then beat Golden State in six or something like that.
I don't think that helps at all. I think it's just the opposite. I think if Golden State establishes themselves, which I think they will, then you can say, well, they weren't beating that Golden State team either. They're an all-time team. But if Milwaukee, come on. Milwaukee's not an all-time great team yet.
Well, this is what I'm saying, though. Is it possible we underestimated the Bucks?
Maybe a little, but they're not an all-time great. If you're fully loaded and everyone's playing to their capability on that Celtics team, you're still better. You are still better. Absolutely.
You have more talent.
Absolutely, you have more talent. Long commercial-free segment is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
Ow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
2 seconds to go. That'll do it. Bring out the Zamboni. Jordan Binnington records his first ever playoff shutout as the St. Louis Blues win 5-0 behind a hat trick from Jaden Schwartz. They take a 3-2 series lead and come home for game six on Tuesday night in St. Louis with a chance to move on to the Stanley Cup final.
Who knows? San Jose and St. Louis, if it ends Tuesday, they're sitting around for 6 days, too. And is there a big difference between 6 and 10? I mean, at the end of the day, I think both teams are going to be rusty if it goes six. If it goes seven, then they might have that competitive edge in the first game. But we'll do our best to overcome that.
This thing, you think it's more important for St. Louis to win and have a long layoff, or it to go seven and then to beat each other up for another game?
Thus
having less rust, though, when you actually do start, if you get it.
I do believe, I've just convinced myself it's the latter. I want to see this series go to seven. I'd like a triple overtime in there. I think you've already seen it catch up with San Jose. The Blues, not so much, but I think the longer it goes, the more you're going to see that these two teams beat the bejesus out of each other.
It's definitely caught up to San Jose. There's no question. Carlson is just limping to the finish line, and Hurdle goes out last night, and Pavelski goes back out last night. I don't think there's any question. It's catching up to the Sharks.
I mean, at this stage, honestly, I think it's better if it ends.
For the Bruins.
Yeah. Now there's no gray area. I mean, they're going to get a week off, too. What good does that do? They'll miss 5 days, come in here on Memorial Day, and they haven't played in basically a week. So I think that one cancels itself out. And I just wonder, I mean, St. Louis, they grind, man. They're tough. Like, I don't know if you're going to see a huge wear and tear factor with them either way. Like, and in some ways, their game suits the Bruins better because I think the Bruins can handle that. But I think it's going to be a freaking tractor pull of a series.
We continue with your thoughts. Mike and Woburn, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the attrition factor. And like you guys said, you saw it yesterday with San Jose. They're an absolute MASH unit now. And you know what? You started to see it a little bit, too, on the back line with Pietrangelo taking a couple whacks. So, honestly, the referees mitigated a lot of damage for the Blues, too, because a 5-0 game, that's when a lot of extracurricular stuff in the playoffs gets done. And the refs were quick to throw everybody on San Jose out of that game. They were not that was not playoff officiating that I recall, that lets the third period of a blowout escalate into a complete gong show. That was very regular season-esque with the way they tossed Haley, they tossed Kane, they gave them like a dozen power plays at the end.
Yep.
And by the way, the San Jose fans chanting, "Refs, you suck," might have been the most ironic thing I've ever heard. That's like Montreal complaining about regional draft rights. They have no business talking about the refs sucking.
Yeah, so Murray mentioned that before. That is Rich, of all people.
And it wasn't just because of this overtime thing with the hand pass. It's every series they've played in, they've benefited from a dubious officiating. So for those a-holes in that building yesterday, I can understand you're frustrated. But to sit there and chant, "Refs, you suck," they're only there in the first place because of the refs.
Seriously, have you ever seen a team luckier than that? In terms of having the horseshoe wedge so far up there, it's coming out every orifice in your head?
We are on a reentry Monday. We've done Celtics. We've done Red Sox. We've done Patriots. OTAs, passing camp starting this week. Brady's not there again. Any other team, that would be outrageous. This one, it just doesn't matter. No one there to push him, right? That's on the table. We also did a little bit on Deontay Wilder Saturday night in Brooklyn. Did you see that, folks? Did you see that shot? Did you see that? He says going into the fight that, well, I can kill this man and I can get away with it. Then he shows up Saturday night and just about kills him. Todd in Denver had a thought on that. Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, why do you clowns like Deontay Wilder more than the four Boston teams? I mean, doing my Maz impression. Hey, Mr. Wilder, that's Felger. I'm Maz, and he's Murray. Will you please remember me when I walked by the cool guy table in the cafeteria? That was embarrassing, Maz. Come on.
If he puts on a Boston jersey, we'll hate him. How's that?
That's a good way to look at it.
Hey, can we talk about Brooks Koepka more than Wilder? The guy just won his fourth major in less than 2 years.
Brooks Koepka, hold on. What, do you want people to fall asleep at the wheel and crash? Brooks Koepka.
I'm glad he brought this up.
Go ahead.
Okay? I'm glad I brought this up. His two titles, two U.S. Opens, two PGAs. As far as I'm concerned, he hasn't won a major yet. Okay? Really?
What, why do you say that?
Because they're both hack tournaments. They're the tournaments that any scrub can win.
The U.S. Open's not a hack tournament.
Sure it is. Andy North won it twice. Curtis Strange won it twice. Guys who never won other majors. There's always some jackass that wins the U.S. Open because it's purely a contest of not effing up. It's not really a risk-reward type of tournament is what I'm getting at. And now they do the same thing with the PGA, which is essentially a U.S. Open knockoff. So Koepka can kiss my ass. Until he wins a Masters or a British Open, I think the guy's a phony.
Well, my issue is he's boring. Caller, why do we talk about Deontay Wilder and not Brooks Koepka? Because one is interesting and one isn't.
It would have been so more interesting yesterday if Koepka crapped his pants and Dustin Johnson won. And he came close, but you know what happened? Dustin Johnson saw that he had a chance and he crapped his pants too. That's what happened.
Deontay Wilder brings people out of their seats. Brooks Koepka has them lie down in their seats and take a nap. Let's talk Brooks Koepka.
That guy's got four majors. Four. And as far as I'm concerned, it's zero.
I think that's a silly take. But that's not what I'm here for. You can, to me,
PGA championships, they shouldn't count.
Do Brooks Koepka on your own time. Do Brooks Koepka on your own time. I'm going to talk about people who actually entertain you, like the Bronze Bomber. We have an hour to go. No commercials. Just an update from Murray. We'll reset some of our Celtics thoughts as well, so don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.